Support for Spookfound Spotlight is provided by the City of Maryville, featuring a conference center at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, offering a destination for wedding receptions, parties, reunions, and more. Details on availability and accommodations are at mazingolake.com. And from Kawasaki Motors Manufacturing in Maryville, producing gas-powered engines for lawn and garden equipment for over 30 years. Kawasaki has employment opportunities available now for all three shifts, weekends, and full and part-time. For more information, KawasakiMaryville.com.
Welcome back to Spoofhound Spotlight here on KXCV. Karen W., I'm your host, Jeremy Werner, and joining me, as he does for every episode of Spoofhound Spotlight, is the Maryville R2 Superintendent, Dr. Logan Lightfoot. So, not to say we're in the dog days of summer, but, you know, even though things are kind of slow, there's still plenty of things going on this month. It was either this month or very late last month, but the Maryville Board of Education had a retreat. How did it go?
Great. Jeremy, we met last week and it was a full day. So, and you hear the term retreat, at least for me, I think of like, you know, Cancun and poolside, that kind of thing. Definitely not that. In the comfy and friendly confines of the Maryville R2 Board of Education room. But we, in terms of the work we got done, it was great in terms of progress. And so we, you know, obviously we look at some of the really important things coming up in our school district. You know, we look at our district finances, we look at our priorities, we look at our CSIP, all those kinds of things. But it was fantastic. I mean, we went 9 to 4 that day, and we had a great facilitator in that was a former superintendent, and just talked through, you know, kind of the first half of the day was really how to work effectively as a team and how to really serve your school district well. And so we talked about, you know, team dynamics and board expectations, superintendent expectations, and we kind of finished the day off on with a little bit more of the pragmatic things. We looked at, like I said, we looked at our budget, we looked at kind of what's coming up for the school year, and looked at a little bit of construction projects, and that rounded it off. But definitely, I would say, an incredibly productive day.
You know, the thing that kind of sticks out about that, you know, regardless of whether it's a weekday or weekend, is you basically implied a full-day retreat. And, you know, this isn't like, you know, their jobs or anything. They have jobs. They have families. But the board, you know, took an entire day out of their schedule to go do this. What is that like, you know, for you, where this is your full-time job and you're working with these people who are, you know, basically saying, hey, here's my free time. Here's my free day. Here's my weekend day, you know?
Yeah, huge. And I should have mentioned that. I mean, we've got such a good board, and we really do. I mean, I think it's a really good balance because you've got all different types of people on our school board. You've got all different types of occupations and all those kinds of things. But really, I mean, we have a common belief, and you pointed it out. If you've got someone that's willing to take an entire work day, you know, take off and come out here, and it's not their job. They don't get paid. But really with a heart to serve everybody. So I couldn't speak more highly of our board members, and they really are. They're in it for kids, they're in it for teachers, and they're really wanting to make our district the best it can possibly be.
Okay. Well, the other thing kind of going on this summer has been summer school, which just wrapped up. How do you feel it went, especially since you weren't able to have it in your typical facility?
Yeah. So summer school, very successful. Our teachers, Shelley Green, you know, we had a couple of things going on this year, and I'm glad you brought this up because I think, hope/think, this is going to be a precursor to next school year. We have got incredibly talented and resilient teachers, and we kind of threw it at them this year. We said, okay, we can't do summer school at Eugene Field, which is kind of the easiest place to have summer school. We moved our building to the middle school, and then on top of that, we had the teachers create their own curriculum. And I tell you what, I mean, just really engaging with kids. I mean, I think we had about 170, 180 or so participate in summer school this year still. They designed all types of learning activities, things that really kind of kept kids engaged, and some fun things too. And they weren't in their home base. I mean, we literally packed them up the last day of school in boxes and got the boxes shipped over to the middle school. They unpacked and they made a room and were ready for kids like the next week. And so, I mean, to be able to pull that off and do it well, that speaks volumes about our teaching staff.
So you would almost say, if I was to give you a review of summer school, it'd be, you know, it would almost be like any other summer school.
It, well, I guess not a lot of school districts do the full day like we do. And so I don't know if it would or wouldn't be kind of like other summer schools, but I can see why parents would want to enroll their kids in summer school here.
Okay.
They hit learning targets. They hit the essentials in some of the curriculum that really kind of extends learning and really kind of helps prevent learning loss. But at the same time, I mean, they're kids, right? They've got to be entertained. They've got to have fun. And they mix that in there too. So, I mean, really, then it was all 100% created by our teachers.
Well, I think it speaks to not only staff and educators, but I think it, you know, speaks to administrators when you do have that big change for summer school and yet, you know, no problems, everything goes off without a hitch.
Yeah.
Does shifting something like that kind of teach you about summer school in the future? Like, oh, well, we do have an option to kind of shift it around, or we can, you know, we're not defined by one building for it.
Absolutely. I think there's some learning lessons in that. And I even think if you look at a bigger picture there, it kind of teaches us some lessons for the fall, you know, because we are going to be in different places. We are going to be displaced. And so, you know, but the bottom line is we want to do everything we can possibly do to create a great learning experience for kids. And if you kind of look at it through that lens, and you see, like I said, our teaching staff, we have wonderful building leaders as well. I'm very confident that when we roll into next year, things will look a little bit different, but it's going to be a great year. And that's a testament to our kids and to our teachers.
Well, speaking of that, what's the construction like going on with not only Eugene Field, but the field itself at the high school?
Well, we are. You mentioned dog days, and it has been a very busy summer so far. So I'll start with Eugene Field. We ended up, last day of school happened, and then the very next day we started moving all of our teachers out and moving to their classrooms. And I want to say, and I've talked about how great our teaching, resilient our teaching staff is, and completely true, but we would not be able to pull this off without our community. There's a couple of reasons I mentioned this. So that first day back, we've had such good community support. So kids are out of school, we're in there with a building, and we have to move 44 classrooms, and we've got to move content out of there. I mean, that's a lot to do. We had the bridge show up, the bridge church show up, and they had 10-15 workers there to help us. They made they made lunch for our teachers and just lent a helping hand everywhere they could. So we had that happen. Then maybe a week later, we came back and we had teachers come in and help us move. The Spook Pound football team came. And so we had, you know, 15 boys show up, help teachers move, right, which, by the way, mind you, right before a practice. And so they go to practice. And then the following week, just to kind of get everything finished off, we kind of left our heavy desks and our chairs and things like that, which was not an easy task. And we had the Bearcat football team show up.
Oh.
And we had probably had 15, 20 of our Northwest football players come. And I mean, which, by the way, they emptied it in like an hour and a half, which is insane. It would have taken us like 3 days, but got it all taken care of. And that is just, Jeremy, that's just a testament to the Maryville community. I mean, you think about all the way from high school boys in the dead heat of summer coming to help teachers move to, you know, volunteers from a church to our national champion football team, all pitching in a hand to help us. And I just, if that is Maryville in a nutshell, I think that's it.
Man, I did not know that, and I'll say this, it probably beats running laps around the track in the summer.
Yes, I would think
but
so.
But no, like, I didn't know that. That's, you know, and you didn't ask at all. You just kind of just showed up, and you're like, "Oh, hey guys, what are you doing here?"
They knew there was a need, and they just showed up. I mean, it was incredible. And so, I mean, I guess humbled might be the right word. I don't know. I don't want to be cliche, but like, we couldn't have done, I mean, we could have, but like, to do this on our own would have been really tough. And just to have all that extra help, and you've got teachers coming in helping other teachers, like, that is that's the true definition of community. So I was really pleased by that.
Now, is there, because, you know, we've had an interesting start to the summer, not only severe weather, but now the heat. Has that put any damper on any of the, you know, work that's been happening?
No, good question. So, right now, we've got, if you've been down to the high school lately, we started May the 13th with building what's called the base for our fields. And so when you have a project like what we're doing, we're turfing our fields, there's kind of two phases. There's the base building phase and there's the turfing phase. And essentially the base building phase, they are skinning, for lack of a better term, the field, getting that base prepped. They've got to make sure it's laser graded. They've got to make sure it withstands a roll test. A lot of things go into that. We've got a lot of fencing going into the baseball, softball fields. All those things are happening right now. And we really haven't, I mean, we've got a really good crew down. Burnin' Jones is, I mean, they do this a lot, and they've done very well. The crew and the superintendent are very good. They've been working kind of all through everything. They've had to take a couple days off with rain, but other than that, it's been moving. If you look down there now, I think they're I don't think they are. They're still on track right now. I would guess they're going to be rocking both fields next week. And then it looks like we're still on schedule to turn over the fields to the turf installation company about the third week of July. And if everything does go well, which we think and hope it will, we're going to be ready, probably by mid-August or so, maybe end of August, both fields will be done and ready to go.
Okay. And I assume there's backup plans in case that doesn't happen.
We do. Yes. Okay. We've got backup plans, but we hope we don't have to, we hope we don't have to use them. But, nonetheless, once those things are done, and details to come on this, but we're going to throw a big party.
Okay.
And we're going to have the community come out, and we want to showcase, because this is not just for Maryville High School. You know, this is not just for Maryville, you know, just the kids that go to our school. It's been a community project. It's been our taxpayers, our patrons have supported us. And so we want to invite them out to kind of see the fruits of the labor and have them enjoy it.
Okay. Well, only other thing I really had for, I mean, you know, dog days of summer, but still a lot of work going on. The thing that was discussed at the Board of Education meeting this month was the Employee Assistance Program, and you guys just wrapped up your first year. Go ahead and tell us about the program and how the first year went.
Yeah, we did. And it was in terms of a first year of implementation on something like that, you always kind of wonder, you know, is it going to be successful? Are people actually going to use it? We had a great user rate and a great success rate with it. And really what the Employee Assistance Program is, EAP for short, it's just another way that we can support our employees and their families on a wide range of issues. So this program offers free counseling services, free mental health services, financial counseling. You know, I mean, life happens, right? I mean, we have, like I've said, we have wonderful teachers, wonderful coaches and support staff. But gosh, I mean, you think about things that happen in the course of, you know, a couple of years. You can deal with deaths in the family. You can deal with things that really kind of rock you personally. And we want to make sure as a school district that we support our employees in every way we can. And so we actually, last year, our Board of Education committed to funding this program, and it's available to any Maryville R2 employee and the rest of their families. And so anything that this company or this particular program can do to help them, to support their mental health, to support, you know, a healthy balance of work and family, those kinds of things, it's available to our employees free of charge. And so we've really been impressed with how our employees have taken advantage of that. And in fact, we're ready to boot up and go for the next year on it.
And, you know, in an area where mental health may not be at the top or even easily accessible for people in the area, is that something that kind of was created through just feedback from employees within the district? Like, hey, maybe something mental health, you know, could benefit because, you know, we don't necessarily have dozens of therapists and psychiatrists in the area.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do every year a district wellness survey, you know, just in terms of asking our employees, you know, how are you doing? What can we do to support you? So it was a little bit driven by that. And just, you know, we kind of looked as a leadership team and what are the needs of our employees? I mean, obviously you want to pay our teachers as much as we possibly can, right? But there's limitations on that. And so, you know, we only have so much money coming in and we want to be responsible with our taxpayers. And so this is a way that, you know, it's not necessarily loading a bunch of money on the salary schedule, but it's a way to say, to tell our employees, we support you and we're glad you're a part of the Maryville R2 family. And if there's anything we can do to help you, here's a resource. And so that's just a way we're able to do that.
So this is kind of more of a related yet kind of off topic personal question, but, you know, having been in several school districts and been in education for so long, do you feel personally that the focus of mental health has been increasing for employees and students within the school system over the years?
That's a great question. I would say absolutely. I would say probably over the last 5 years, particularly, you know, I mean, when you think of public education, you need, a lot of things are driven by student needs, right? Which they it absolutely should be. And we've just, you know, we're, you know, fair or unfair, like it or not, we're in a time where, you know, kids have trauma, and kids probably experience trauma in different and more ways than maybe they even experienced trauma 20 years ago. You know, when I started as a high school English teacher, there are things I know that kids face now that, you know, maybe kids in, you know, 20 years ago did face, but probably in more of a volume. And so we want to have resources for our kids. But obviously, if, you know, as leaders, we kind of look around and we're doing the best to take care of our kids, but how do we take care of those that take care of our kids, if that makes sense? And we've got, I think if a person goes into public education, no matter what their position, whether it's a teacher, whether it's a paraprofessional or whatever the case might be, they come in with a servant's heart and they want to help. And, you know, oftentimes with that, you pour a lot of yourself into your job. But we want to make sure that we support you on that other end, to where if there are issues that, you know, we can help with, that we can provide services and support with, we want to do that. So that's kind of where this came about.
Okay. Because I know, at least in terms of my viewpoint over the years, working in news and seeing things as I grow up, you have all these different fields that, you know, traditionally there wasn't the discussion of mental health. Mm-hmm. Policemen, firemen, you know, a lot of first responders. And in a lot of ways, I think, you know, now teachers are being kind of, you know, talked about as well in the mental health realm. And I feel like that's, you know, not to compare them completely to firefighters and police, but there is a lot of connection between burnout, you know, having to deal with, you know, a lot of traumatic situations. Do you feel like that kind of topic and discussion has changed to where, oh, maybe we should, you know, make sure that the people who are on the front lines of all these different things get the mental health help that they need?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, another really good question. Yes, absolutely. When you look at the teaching profession, teacher retention is a real thing right now. And teacher shortage is absolutely a real thing right now. And so I kind of look at from a superintendent point of view, when you've got a pool of candidates coming in, they're 23, 24 years old, getting ready to enter the field of education, we have got to step up our game and do everything we can do to make sure that we have healthy and satisfied teachers that really enjoy coming to work, that enjoy coming to a school district that supports them and enjoy their kids. And so anything we can do as a leadership wise to help that, that's a big thing. And if you look at not just in Missouri, but nationwide, you know, the percentage of teachers that are out of the profession after their first 5 years is staggering. And so we want to do everything we can here in Maryville to not be part of that national trend. We want teachers to come here. We want them to stay here. And I realize, I mean, we're in Maryville. We're in a university town. And so there's going to be times where we have younger teachers that, you know, life circumstances, and whether it be marriage or family or whatever, where they do move on. And that's okay. If they do move on, we want them to stay in public education. You know, we want good teachers teaching kids. And so anything we can do to either A, keep them here, or B, keep them in the profession, we want to make sure we do that. And so that has been a big push. And you probably hear it more, especially being on the news side, that I think it's gaining a lot more traction nationally, that teachers do burnouts and teachers do face a lot of stress at work. And so that's kind of a natural piece of the times right now. But that doesn't mean we can't do everything we can in our power to help our teachers and help our support staff.
I once worked with someone who said something that I still remember to this day. It's something to the effect of, it doesn't matter how much money you might make at your job, if you're unhappy, you're just not going to want to be there.
Yeah, and there's truth to that. I really believe that. Yeah, we want to, back to the teacher pay, of course, we want to up that teacher pay.
But yeah.
I mean, the job satisfaction piece is so crucial.
Oh yeah, I mean, even if you're making 6-7 figures a year at a job, and you show up every day just hating it, then what's the money mean? What's it all mean? Like, you know, that's so. But it's good that, you know, to go back into what originally became this, it's good that there is an employee program like this within the school district. So
yeah, absolutely,
it's good to hear that it's working and that it's going to continue. Is there anything else that is going on in the school district?
Oh, you know, I'm trying. We've got, we've talked about our building projects. We're going to, and probably a couple of weeks from now, we're going to start one other. It's not a major project, but it's an important one. We're going to actually install a safety island that's going to be in our main high school parking lot, to where that'll kind of help direct traffic flow when traffic comes in. So we'll start that at the end of July and have that done probably the first week of August, for when students come back. So we're looking forward to getting that in for, you know, just kind of help safety in the parking lot for the next umpteen years. And really, that's kind of, I would say, between that and kind of getting prepared for an unusual school year for 24-25, that's kind of what we've been up to.
Okay. Well, if that's it, we'll go ahead and go into our next segment, which is Better Know a Superintendent, where I ask a bunch of inane random questions of the superintendent across from me. And, you know, summer is about vacation and travel, and so I thought, what's a great kind of travel question that isn't just, you know, the typical thing that I think I'd last year? But if you could live in any foreign country for a year, which one would it be and why? And so I thought about this, and I was like, almost anywhere in Europe, almost anywhere. Not basically, my theory and thesis behind this is that, you know, I've been to Germany, I've been to Austria. I would love to go somewhere that, you know, is international, but at least everybody around me can speak my language. Because if you've never been to Europe, English is a secondary language for a lot of those countries. They do learn it. And so what I learned very quickly in Germany when I tried to speak their language is that they would immediately recognize I was a foreigner, or as they say, an Ausländer, and would just respond to me in English. So it'd be like, you know, which I guess in a lot of ways is kind of a huge assumption on their end to assume that I'm just English. But regardless, I that is why I would like to go on, you know, Germany, great. Sweden, perfect. Mm-hmm. Italy, okay. Yep. You know, so what about you?
So you mentioned I would go Sweden. And I'm not a huge traveler, and so I don't, you know, especially an international traveler, but my wife actually she lived in Sweden for 6 months during college. Oh. And I've gotten to see all those pictures, and I mean, it's got kind of a nice mix of really cool history, you know, kings and queens and that kind of thing, but just really, I mean, a beautiful place and very kind people. We actually hosted a foreign exchange student from Sweden our last year in Nebraska, and just kind of fun to learn more about their culture. And I honestly, I think that's probably where I go.
Funny you say that. I actually know someone living in Sweden. And the first thing you said when she said she was there for college was his college experience of every single club that they go to just playing ABBA at some point. He's like, yes. As much as that country doesn't, you know, is kind of like, okay, we're known for ABBA, whatever, they also love ABBA.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. He said they went to several, because the way that some of them do, there was one he discussed, it was like in a warehouse, and so each floor was like a different genre of music, and he's like, yep, sure enough, the pop floor was just a good mix of ABBA and some other stuff.
I love it.
But what, was she in the southern part of the country?
I believe northern Sweden.
Oh.
Örebro.
Hopefully not near the Arctic Circle.
I don't think that's very desolate. Yeah, I don't think that north. Okay. But Örebro is where she was, and went and actually took classes over there. And yeah, I mean, that, I don't know. I guess if you were able to go as a college kid with very little responsibilities, that probably helps a little bit too. But I would not mind just kicking back in Sweden.
Well, you know, the other great thing about Europe is that you have a train system that can literally just take you anywhere in a day.
Absolutely. Yes, for sure.
So if you're sick of, you know, Sweden, you can take a train and go to southern France for a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So this is I was trying to think of something else to build off of. I couldn't, so I went with something stereotypical. If you could have a dinner party with any person, living or dead, who would it be and why? And it's one of those, this is almost like one of those Cosmo magazine things. but when I think about it, I think about So I don't know if I've mentioned this before, and it has nothing to do with the James Cameron movie, but I'm a huge kind of shipwreck nerd. So the king of all shipwrecks is a Titanic, and so I'm a huge Titanic nerd. I guess I would love to have Captain Smith pulled from the icy Atlantic Ocean and revived so that I could ask him what exactly happened to all these questions that we will just never know.
That's a great, I would have never thought of that angle. That's a great angle for that question. I like that.
Well, there's a lot of things that happened that night that we will just never know. Like, why did the lieutenants on one side of the ship only load women and children, yet the other side loaded women and children, and then when there were none around, put a few men on? Like, why were those orders so drastically different? Like, why did they spend 40 minutes figuring out if the ship is sinking?
Did they 40 minutes?
I believe so. They didn't launch lifeboats until about 40 minutes in.
Oh, I crazy. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. There's just all these different things like we just don't know.
Yeah.
Especially what happened to him. Like, I would love to be like, so what happened to you? There's a lot of stories about how you saved a baby, which probably isn't true.
Yeah, that's a good one. So mine, I'm going to take family out. I would actually, Marcus Aurelius is who I would love to have a conversation with. He was one of the first and prominent Roman Stoics. And you think of the Roman Empire, mm-hmm. and how powerful it became. It wasn't all about just brute force. You had to have some great leadership and great minds leading that. And he was one of the first to really adopt the philosophy of, you know, kind of listen first, speak last, and walk amongst the people. And in fact, one of the things, kind of one of my traditions I like to do before school gets started, they have a book out called Meditations of Marcus Aurelius, and it literally is just his daily journals they publish in a book, and how he approaches life, how he approaches people, you know, empathy and caring for others. He's one that just, when you think of a selfless servant leader, that's him. And I would love to have a conversation with how he approached leading such a huge empire and growing it by being a servant first. So I would definitely that'd be Marcus Aurelius.
That almost sounds like several dinner parties would be needed.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, for sure.
you remember that thing? It was like a few months ago. It was mainly women online saying, you know, ask your boyfriend, partner, husband, whatever about the Roman Empire, and they'll immediately know a bunch of just stupid stuff about it.
Yes. I remember that. I remember seeing that a summer or two ago. Yeah.
Like, I don't know as much about him, but I know more about, like, failed Roman emperors like Nero,
well, yeah.
who decided to declare war on Poseidon and had his soldiers throw spears into the ocean.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's I remember seeing that. I don't know how many useless facts I could give, but he'd definitely be my guy.
So, not to go back to I didn't expect this to happen, but when I was in Germany, we were walking in the Black Hills Forest. We live with a family for like a week on our trip. It helped cheapen the experience.
Oh, sure.
Or, well, not cheapen in terms of the experience, but keep costs under.
Uh-huh.
Especially when you have free food and a house to live in. But
that's nice.
We were walking in the Black Hill Mountains, and I spotted this giant pillar in the, like, stone pillar. I'm like, what is that? And they go, oh, this stuff's all over. It's from when the Romans were up here, and... this one's cracked. You can tell why they didn't even take it with them. They left it here. They finished it. It cracked, so they just left it here.
Oh, that's crazy.
And so there's just like all this Roman history just lying around their country.
Just in the forest.
And I'm
that's
just like,
awesome.
This is like mind-boggling. This is like thousands of years old.
That's really cool. Yeah, things you can't see in the United States, that's for sure. Yeah.
Well, anything else?
Jeremy, great time to be a spoof hound, that's for sure.
Support for Spoofhound Spotlight comes from Kawasaki Motors Manufacturing, producing gas-powered engines for lawn and garden equipment for over 30 years thanks to the workforce at its Maryville plant. Employment opportunities at Kawasaki are available now. For information on careers, kawasakimaryville.com. Also from the city of Maryville, home to Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. Golf offerings at Mazingo Lake include the Seacrest 18, the Watson 9, and golf simulators open year-round in the conference center. Details on tee times are available at mazingolake.com.